Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom. I am Josh Beiser, the owner and lead writer. Join me this week, Game Wisdom site designer and artist for Smugby Games, Kenneth Olm.
Hey there.
So for this week, we're just going to have a nice, quiet chat. I know for the last few weeks, we've had a number of guests, we've done a number of themed topics, so I figure we're just going to have a nice little relaxing. What do you think, Ken?
Yeah, sounds like a good go.
And I know it's been pretty crazy. There's been a lot of news this week, and probably not be able to get to everything. So the part that I want to talk about is a game that I've been waiting for the last few months to come out has finally been released on the PC, and that's the Pinball Arcade from Farsight Studios. If you remember, in August, I think, we had on, I think his name was Bobby King.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who haven't watched that or forgot, the Pinball Arcade is basically an attempt to digitally recreate pinball, like classic pinball tables, as faithfully and as physics-wise, as realistically as possible to the PC. Because obviously, a lot of these tables are either very hard to find and pretty much super expensive to get if you want to try to play one of them by yourself. So Farsight's been doing this now for, I think, since like 2003, 2004, but I may be wrong with that. And they've been having a lot of trouble getting it onto the PC. When we talked with Bobby in August, he was talking about having the Pinball Arcade in beta and, you know, getting ready to be shipped by the end of August. And now it's first week of November and they finally got up there.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds good, but they've ran into a bit of a snag. And that is the fact that their DLC is not being handled the same way as other games on Steam. Normally, when a game has a lot of DLC, you know, like we've talked about the train simulators, farming, Euro Truck, and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
all that DLC gets put on the front page or on their actual store page, so you can see it and buy it directly through Steam. But with the Pinball Arcade, they ran into a problem that, because of their pricing structure, they have basically four different ways of buying tables. You can buy the table separately, you can buy the season, or all the tables they release within like a certain time frame in a group. You can buy the pro version, which it unlocks like the table operator and additional cameras. And of course, you can then buy that in its own, you know, season pass. So when you combine that with the fact that they've got upwards of over like 30, 40 tables on the Pinball Arcade right now. Steam basically said, no, that's too much DLC, we can't list that. Or it's too confusing, it would confuse our consumers. And they basically force Farsight, as the story is going, to keep it all in-game. So what that means is that a lot of people are not able to view it through Steam, and that means no Steam sales will affect it. And a lot of people talking about how that's really, you know, a major nail in the coffin, possibly, for the platform. So what do you think about that, Ken? Because I know with the Pinball FX2 platform, that has both in-game buys and you can buy through the Steam store. And they've been having a relatively good time over the last few months.
I think it'll be a major problem seeing that, you know, a lot of the chunk of their money comes from that DLC, right? They need as much awareness as possible.
Yeah, the platform is free to play. When you download it for the first time, you get one table for free. Mm-hmm. Tales of, I can't remember the exact name of it, but they say it's like one of the more popular tables. But then again, a lot of people complain about with Pinball FX2 how it's labeled, you know, quote unquote free to play, but then you have to buy all the tables.
Right. And it is a major blow because that's the quality. You know, it's one of the best things about being on Steam is being allowed to show your stuff on sale and getting that kind of awareness, being part of, you know, an event. So I think that's going to be an issue that they're going to have to either overturn or they just have to really promote their free to play game itself and to raise awareness on that product.
Now, there's this general complaint, I want to get your thoughts on this, Ken, that a lot of people, when I browse the forums for both the Pinball FX2 and the Pinball Arcade, people complain about how it's labeled free-to-play, but you have to pay for the tables. And this is just one of those arguments I find a little odd by the fact that you are free to play these tables, but their monetary revenue comes from the fact that you have to spend, I think it's like $4 normal on Pinball Arcade, and like $2 or $3 per table for Pinball FX2. So some people find that as a little misleading, because of the fact that it's labeled free-to-play. What do you think about that, Ken?
Well, I think people are used to the concept of for free-to-play that they don't need, if they can play the game, they don't need to spend any money at all. And they're probably feeling, you know, that there's a sleight of hand going on with the way that they're offering the cost of these tables. And I think that what they need to do is, some nice PR and to make sure that the customers don't, snowball that mindset to the rest of oncoming customers that could buy the product.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've seen this with other games in the past that, a few or small group of very opinionated gamers will just blast review sites. We've seen, Amazon one-star attacks on books or games that, because the game was on Steam or because someone didn't like something, they would just review bomb it. And in, today's age, reviews are a very big deal. We talk about how a lot of major companies use Metacritic for bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen just how much, you really only have a short time to get someone's attention. If they go on Amazon and they see your game has 200 one-star reviews, they're not going to bother to look through them and see what the problem is. They're just going to assume your game or your book or your whatever is shitty.
Well, the thing is that, again, with any free-to-play, you want to be as you don't want to seem exploitive. I think a PR and a good presence is extremely important for free-to-play because just going into it, people are extra skeptical. So they need to make sure that they feel that they're getting their time's worth. For what they're actually playing.
And I think, I hate to say this, but one of the big problems, I think, with Farsight has been their PR side of things. I know when I first spoke with Bobby through email, it took about 3-4 emails just to get through to them, and then they even lost my whole email, my interview with them. And I think he even said that they haven't even really set up a PR department while they were doing the third Kickstarter for Terminator 2.
Well, they don't need a PR department, but they need someone to handle their PR.
Yeah.
It can be whoever does the marketing, too. They can double up on the job. But they need to be aware of what the public opinion is on their product, if it has the right awareness, if it's getting enough hits, and, if they're, example, like, there's a big thing with web design where it's called SEO, which is search engine optimization, and you need to make sure that you have a high page rank, and you need to pick the right keywords for people to check it out. So if someone searched free pinball arcade, that game would come up immediately, right? There's a lot of other things too, just to get awareness in terms of doing interviews and just doing a whole PR run. I think that is the most important thing to do, especially for a free-to-play game, because if people are aware of it, they'll at least give it a shot, right? And then you'll have a percentage of catch with that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and speaking about having that PR campaign, I remember when they did the Terminator 2 Kickstarter, there was like very little advertisements about it at all. I mean, I only heard about it through the people that I know who both follow the Kickstarters and they follow pinball. And with the pinball arcade, again, I had no idea it actually came out this week. I actually had to have a friend tell me that it was following up on Steam. There was no announcements by Farsight, no email that I got through my Game Wisdom email because I told them to put me on their press list for that. And that is just really a big death sign for a lot of games these days. If you can't get your name out, there's hundreds if not thousands of games being released on a weekly basis these days.
You have an opportunity, right? As soon as your game is released, this is your week to shine. And make sure you get, like, look, example, that Stanley Parabola game, like that, it was only 3 days before it got pushed out of the Steam front page. And that game is an excellent game and is well received by all critics. Yet that game got pushed out for a bunch of other sales. So again, you only have a small window to really promote your game. It doesn't have to be the front page. It just has to be at least in the top, the new releases or whatever. And plus, you need to get that buzz going because maybe they're relying too much on their Kickstarter funders and are established base, but any company wants to increase their base. That's more important because the people that have already paid for certain tables will probably just pay once over, but if you have new customers, you have a lot more potential for higher growth.
Especially with Steam. I mean, didn't they announce this week that they're up to like 60 or 68 million accounts now on it?
Right. They said up to 67 million. It's ridiculous, by the way, to have that much. They have actually surpassed Xbox Live.
Damn.
So there you go. And plus, their games are way better than their indie Xbox games that they put on there. Or what's it called? Xbox Arcade? Is that it?
Xbox Live Arcade?
Yeah.
Or Xbox Indie, something like that?
The indie one. The one that they put like the Flash games on there. And it's like terrible. And it's hard to sift through that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. And going back to what you just said regarding basically getting that awareness, when your game is out to make that awareness known, when I was talking with Chris Park about a week or so ago, I asked him a little bit about the business or the strategy that goes into that, and he says that it really is more like of an art these days to know just when to release your game, know who to pitch it towards, who to contact. And as he said, I think he mentioned that he knows what months not to release games for. Like, there's, of course, the famous, like, I think it's like July to August, like that end of summer draw is usually not the best time to release games. But at the same time, October to December is usually the big period for the AAA design or a AAA market. So we saw, you know, Grand Theft Auto, Batman, and of course, Call of Duty come out. So you also have to weigh yourself of when to release a game to not compete with the AAA guys.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and again, like I said before, you can release your game. If it doesn't have enough presence, it'll be flooded away by all the other games that are coming out at the same time. Especially games that look similar to it. So I guess you have to look at your competitors when you release your games.
Yep, and that's something that I think a lot of indie developers haven't really had that much experience with, because the indie market has always, well, for a long time, has been a very small market. But thanks to Steam, Greenlight, Kickstarter, the whole indie scene has really blown up over the last 2-3 years.
Yeah, and don't forget, there's a lot of different ways to sell your game. You know, there's GMG, there's GOG, there's that, what's that site that uses points?
Or Gamersgate?
Gamersgate. You know, and obviously Steam. So there's a lot of ways to sell your game. Steam isn't the only game in town anymore. And I think GOG is an excellent alternative if you like old, like if you want another library of games. And example, the Humble Bundle with the Daedalic games, the Daedalic Entertainment, I believe, they make adventure games. I already have most of them through GOG. But yeah, so again, I think that independents do have, at least they're not completely tethered to Steam only, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty cool. I guess there's also Desora, right?
Yeah, I haven't really used Desora myself. Or maybe I think I may have bought that
Cognition?
One Hand Finger Punch of Death. It was like one of the not on Steam games.
Ah, I guess, you know, it also people get to some Desora stuff through the bundles too.
Yeah.
Because there was a game I really like called, at least looked really neat, called either a Cognition or a Cognitive something. It's about like a psychic detective. And I believe that was Desora exclusive for a while. And I think now it's finally on Steam too.
Now, speaking about a lot of the indie games, one other piece of news I just remember as we were talking, did you hear about what happened with the Watch It Eye guy?
Ah, it's a tragedy because I love Watch It Eye.
Yeah.
I love the Blackwell series. But yeah, he wrote a post about it too.
Yep, so for those of you who don't know, Watch Your Eye is an adventure game company. They made the Blackwell series that both Ken and I really enjoy this year. Mm-hmm. And they've done several other ones that I haven't played. They did Resonance, I think you called it.
Yep, there was Resonance, there's Primordia, there was Gemini Rue, which is a noir in space, which is pretty cool. And by the way, they released it on iPad too. Recently. That's the last thing they did.
Yeah. So what happened was they just announced that they did a graphic overhaul of, I think, one or two of the games, because we talked about this over the different casts, that their art style gradually changed over, I think, like 5 games in the series right now.
Mm-hmm.
They went from the static, oh no, they went from like talking stills to like more of a static image. And I think you said that when you contacted him, it was more of a economic decision, you know, a way to cut down costs.
He pretty much said, you know, the reason why it happened is because money wasn't flowing as much as when we had the other games.
Yeah, and of course, that's even more disheartening to hear what happened now. So after they did a graphics overhaul, in order to raise more awareness for the game, they had a special Halloween sale where they were basically giving away one of the games for free. Just go to their website, type in a coupon code, and 123, you get the game free.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently what happened was their whole key generation system was very easy to bypass and get around, and some people basically took, I think they announced like 30,000 keys or 30,000 free copies of his game that he didn't really want to give out.
Not just one of his games, all of his games.
Ooh.
Which is ridiculous. That's the only one. The only game I don't have from him is the Emerald City Chronicles, mm-hmm. which is made by a different developer, I believe. But he would have published it.
I think that's one of the ones on Steam, too, because I've seen it a few mm-hmm. times.
All right, I should try it out.
And so, to end this pretty crappy tale, he had to get, basically, I think he canceled all 30,000 keys, or he basically canceled the whole promotion. So, a lot of people who got the key, basically, it got removed from their Steam account, because it was just so much of a big loss that you couldn't tell, you know, who got it legitimately and who got it through the hack or the piracy.
Yeah, and it's tragic too, because he's such a good guy. And if you go to his forums, he'll actually answer you personally. And his game, he also did it for promotion of, or at least to gain more of awareness, because he hasn't released a game in several years. For the new game Blackwell Epiphany, which is coming out.
When was the last Blackwell game came out?
I don't know the exact date. It was a few years ago. It was Blackwell Deception.
Man, I thought they were actually more recent than that, but That could, and it sucks even more by the fact that with these types of adventure games, if you don't put out constant products, constant awareness, as we've said, your game can really just fall by the wayside. You only have a limited window.
He did have his reasons why. I mean, he said that, I know, he was shooting for fall, and then his wife had his baby, and they moved 4 times. So that's why he wasn't able to do anything.
And real life happens, unfortunately, and can interfere. And that's one of the things that we're also learning more about with the Kickstarter process, because a lot of people aren't used to games being delayed by 3-4 months at a time. They think, you know, I'm going to put my money, I'm going to get the game on the exact date that the person said. But
yeah.
I think we all know that plans like that usually never work out.
I think there is some room to barter with the people that have funded your project, because they already kind of know that it's only a small team, and delays do happen. And a lot of the pressure comes from the developers themselves wanting to hit that date. But you have to be realistic about it too, you know?
Yeah.
In the end of the day, the reason they use Kickstarter is to create a decent project that they wanted to make. So, at least in my view, I see it as not only, you know, funding a project, but a charity too. So I'm helping someone out, I'm getting a cool product, I don't care when it comes out, as long as it comes out.
Yeah, I know with Planetary Annihilation, one of the games that I kickstarted, they've been having discussion whether to increase the amount of beta and push back the release, or release the game still and just have more development time post-release. So it's going to be interesting to see, because they were one of like the first mega successes on Kickstarter. They were only asking, I think, 250,000 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure, I think they went over 1 million in terms of pledges through, and they actually hit every one of their extra goals.
Well, again, they had their own controversy, right? Because didn't they sell their game on Steam, at least the alpha of it or something? And they say sold it for like $80?
Yeah, they sold it. They were basically keeping with their Kickstarter prices because they didn't want the guys who donate to feel, you know, burned and screwed. So they were gradually lowering the price of it as the game gets further and further complete. So it was at 80, now it's 60 or 50, and I think it's going to end at $40 release.
Well, it sounds cool. I mean, I'll pick it up, obviously, when it gets to it, because, again, I'm impressed by the technology, but it's not really my type of game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. And I think, speaking about Kickstarter, I think that's a great conversation to move on to what your news is, because I think you want to talk about some of the Kickstarters you've been pledging to.
Right. Well, if everyone loves Myst, or Riven, or Uru, whatever the game is called, the creators, who created that game? Scion?
Scion?
Yes, I think it's Scion, right. They created a new game, Scion, and they created a new game called Abduction with an O.
Huh,
and they are 8 days away from the Kickstarter to end, and they've raised $834,000. Their goal is $1.1 million. But what's interesting to me, and another reason there's a couple reasons why I funded this project. Actually, let me give you like the premise of it. I mean, basically, you have a really cool imaginative world, and I guess the plot, to a degree, at least really vague, that you get whisked away to a universe of mystical things, pretty much, and they have some cool concept art. But they have a pretty interesting video, and they talk about their history, they talk about how Myst was created in Riven, and all those different experiences. And I, looking back on Uru, that was a really, 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 I would say, risky game to put out there, right? And I would say it was also a game that, just if you think about it, it was pretty crazy having 100 people with dial-up modems having, like, it was pretty much Second Life before Second Life was a thing, and it was pretty neat. And I guess the reason why it actually fell apart was because Ubisoft pulled their funding.
Yeah.
And ever since then, they've been making, like, casual phone games, which kind of sucks. So I'm great to see them return to form.
So is this, like, an actual adventure game, or is this, like, something else? Like, what's the game that they've been talking about?
They didn't really say particularly. I would say it's more an adventure game, right? Exploration is probably their focus. And they're actually using the Unreal 4 engine, right? So that they've already licensed that out, so they're actually going to use it.
Looks pretty interesting. But then again, I remember from our chat with Chris Garner a few weeks ago about adventure games, I still have my scars from trying to figure out those puzzles from Myst and Uru. So.
Oh, yeah. But I don't know. I enjoyed Myst because I actually had a journal and I actually had wrote notes in it because I had to, because it was so cryptic. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And by the way, the word I was looking for earlier and I kept like dilly-dallying is the word ambitious. So Uru was very ambitious of a game. But yeah, so I funded that project and they're pretty close to their goal. And actually the first stretch goal is a support for Oculus Rift. So that's awesome. So any game, any Kickstarter project that supports Oculus Rift, I'm giving them my money. I randomly do it. I just randomly do it. Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to play a game for like that first person experience, I mean, pretty much anything CN has done has been usually some of like the best visual side of things in terms of video games.
Yeah, so any game that is exploration and not combat heavy was great for Oculus Rift. I mean, you could play a combat game, but I'd rather take my time and look around. So that's one game that I would love for them to support.
Yeah. All right, so what other games have you been pledging?
Not games, but actual physical devices. So again, as you know, I do development on the Rift, and I really a supporter of virtual reality and VR. And so I supported two projects recently. One is called the STEM, and you know what the Razer Hydra is?
I've heard. I think you mentioned that we're talking with Jamie Friesen from Energy Hub.
Oh yeah, so it's motion controls, right? But they're tethered to a device. They use electromagnetic like hub or something to get orientation and coils, I believe. And the company that made the technology, Sixth Sense, are branching away and had a Kickstarter for themselves and made a wireless version of the controller. And it uses newer tech, so it's way more responsive. And it also has trackers on them, so they can track different parts of your bodies. So you can actually attach stems to different parts of your bodies and simulate your arms, legs, waist, head, any of that stuff. And I actually funded the first level of it, which is, third level of it, actually. It's where you have the two controllers, the base for orientation, obviously, and then one for your head or chest. But I did that because the Oculus Rift, when it actually comes to consumer side, it'll probably have a head tracking solution for it. So I probably wouldn't need that. So having one on my chest or having one on my waist will give my character or whatever an orientation. So my arms don't flip through my body or something crazy like that. But yeah, so it's a really cool project. It was funded within 4 hours, which is crazy. So they asked for $250,000 and they made it immediately. And yeah, that's another thing too. Is like it's kind of funny because whenever someone announces a Kickstarter project, I wait on the hour because every Kickstarter project has an early bird special. So you have to be there like on the dot and make sure that you choose fast before it's all gone.
Yeah, that's how I got the Planetary Annihilation. I got their early bird price for it, so I'm getting the game for just $10, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It harkens back to like Black Friday, waiting those sales or stuff like that, or just waiting in front of a shop for something to open for the first time. But it's simulated in an online experience for me. And I really I regret not buying the early bird special for the Omni, which is the treadmill.
Okay.
And I'm gonna have to buy it at full price, which is like $500. I could have bought it at $250 if I wanted the early bird special. Well, that was just the base, there's no harness. However, so I am all about going to early bird specials now. Okay, so the next project is actually something that goes with the STEM, and it's called Reactive Grip by a company called Tactical Haptics. Tactical Haptics, correct.
Okay.
And if you know what haptic technology is, it's the type of feedback you get from controller is what we normally see as haptics. But haptics have many uses in the industry, but they've always been extremely expensive, like thousands and thousands of dollars to create a real feeling in a virtual world.
Okay.
Or they're used for, robotics and stuff like that. So this is the first one used on a controller that actually simulates realistically, effects on the controller. So the reactive grip itself attaches to a stem or a Hydra or actually any solution, I believe.
Okay.
That does motion control. You could use a what is that Sony product?
The PlayStation Move?
The PlayStation Move or the Wii or whatever. So it all can attach to it. But the really cool thing about it is when you use it, there's a gyroscope within it. So let's say you have a flail, right? If you actually swing at the controller, you actually feel the weight of it spinning around. Or if you shoot a gun, you actually feel the kickback, right?
Okay, so
and if you,
I just want to make sure I understand this right. So the stem itself, that's the actual motion control itself.
But this is an attachment to it, okay, right? It'll be compatible with it.
Okay.
So this thing, but the only problem with the development kit and the reason I was hesitant on buying it is because it was wired. So I'm like, what's the point of buying the stem if this thing is wired, right? So my solution was this. I was thinking about this and people discussed it on the forums is, just buy one, because originally if you buy two, it's $300, and that's just the early bird special. So if you buy it straight up, it's $350. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So I bought the early bird special for one because I can still do development on it and get a sense of it. And, you can still use it for sword play and a bunch of other things and fishing and all the kind of bowling, whatever. You can do a lot of simulations with it. And then when the actual ones come out, they'll be wireless. So I'll just invest in the two when it comes out and just use one for development only. Which is a cool thing about Kickstarter, is getting that early development kits.
Wait, so you've actually done the stem, the reactive grip, and the Oculus, or are you getting all three?
I have them all. I already funded the other two. The only one I did not fund, and I regret because I was buying computer parts at the time, is the Virtuex Omni, the treadmill.
Okay.
But I actually want to go to PAX East and try it out myself before I actually buy it, because 500 is a lot to drop for something that might be not effective or
Yeah.
not realistic. But again, Oculus made me a believer when I tried it out. The Hydra is cool, but the major problem is it's wired. So the stem was a great solution. So that was an auto buy for me. The tactical haptics thing is just pure interest, right? I
Yeah.
want to see how it feels. I want to see if it's effective. And again, my goal is to create a full VR experience and ancillary maybe 3D printer. But the point is, I need to get as much as I can to get a virtual experience, and then we can start really making a new step towards games. We've always had the same kind of games come out. Now we're going to have to use. I mean, not everyone can afford it. But actually, it's actually funny because before, if you think about it, even though it seems expensive now, back in the day in the 90s, VR was like thousands and thousands of dollars. It's
Yeah,
ridiculous.
and so
Tens
were
of
like computers as well back then. I remember computers were costing like thousands of dollars for, basic stuff back then.
Yeah, and nowadays you can have a computer that's just as powerful as a desktop on a phone, which is a big push Oculus is doing, is they're giving support for Android phones. So people can have instead of buying a wireless solution because of latency issues, they can just plug it directly into the phone and run software through that, which is really cool.
It's kind of funny if you think about it. People have been talking about how video games have reached like a technical wall, technological wall in terms of graphics, how there's only so far we can go in terms of making games look realistic. But now we're seeing with Kickstarter, a lot of these companies are moving technology in a completely different direction. So the Omni, the Stem, the Reactive Grip, it's going to be very interesting to see if these things will truly become adopted by the general community, or if their price may sort of price themselves out of something a regular person would buy.
Reactive grip is probably out of reach of normal people. I think the stem is plausible. Still a little high, but still, it's a pretty good. Cool, I got two of them with a tracker for $200, which is pretty good. I guess that, well, but then again, I bought the Hydra for $40 on sale. It actually costs about $90 to $100. However, I think, again, this is a really cool thing about Kickstarter is that before, with hardware, you were always tethered to giant companies. Now you can actually look at really cool inventions, invest in yourself, and get it early. I think they're doing a really smart thing because if you want your product to sell, you need hype. You need software. You need things. You need awareness of it, right? And what Oculus and the Stem and Reactive Grip and the treadmill, Omni treadmill, they all give developers kits to people that want to create a new experience. They want to go into VR. They want to experience games in a way that we haven't, because we've been using controllers for so long. It's time to step into a new way. I'm not saying that this is going to be the only way. I'm just saying we need to go into new waters, right? We need to explore what games can be in terms of an immersive experience over just saying immersive in terms of, oh, the graphics, but now it's actually being placed in that world, you know?
And it's kind of funny that we saw how the consoles are still sort of stuck in their same little rut of we're just going to make bigger graphics. Nintendo said we're going to make more motion controls. And now these guys are pretty much saying we're doing, completely different crazy ideas with their stuff.
And don't forget, like that, the concept of the wearable computer is reality. We have wearable computers now. A phone is a very powerful wearable computer, and most of the games that we have nowadays can actually run on a phone, which is insane, but is very true. And with the new Oculus Rift, at least the new consumer version, they're talking about, a 14, what was it, 1440K resolution or whatever, not K but P, whatever. So double the resolution, 1080 or whatever. I don't know. The point is, the new way high resolution screen is going to be available with the Rift, because of phone technology, because the screens are becoming more and more precise and having higher amounts of resolution because of demand from consumers and just because they want to push that technology. So that is allowing the Oculus Rift to be able to get these screens at a lower cost, which is cool. And I think they probably already got some deals with them because they did get a lot of private funding too, on top of their initial Kickstarter project funding. So Kickstarter, you create the hype train, and they are able to sell the technology to private investors too. So I think that they're really going in a great direction. And because of the success of Oculus Rift, Stem, the Omni treadmill, haptic, controller can all exist because of it. And I really think this is like the new the revival of VR, which is great.
So I guess here's a question for you. Do you think any of these will be adopted by consoles? Do you think any of the big console manufacturers will see this and say, hey, maybe we should adopt this? Because usually Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo have been very slow, in a sense, to move towards these new trends. I mean, we first started hearing about PS4 finally supporting indie developers a few months ago, and we've seen the indie scene happen on the PC for at least the last 3-4 years.
Well, actually, Sony has patented their own head-mounted display for their device. So it's possible they're doing their own version of the Oculus Rift for, well, actually just the VR headset for their console. And they already have one that exists now, a 1080p one, actually. But the field of view is actually much smaller than the Rift. So they still have the problem of, like, you're staring at it. It feels like you're looking at a screen from a distance, which isn't really immersive. So plus with the price point for the Rift is $300, that's for developer's kit. And their goal is actually to make it lower than that. But guess how much the head-mounted display cost for Sony that's out right now?
I'm going to say $500?
$1,000.
Oof.
Are you serious? Who's going to buy that? That's more than the console, all the games. Why? Why even make it? Why even sell it? Why even put it in production? Make it like a prototype and be done with it. There's no way that you could sell as a price point.
Yeah, it's just too much, I think. Especially for something that's not even really been tested. At least with the Oculus Rift, they're going for, through the Kickstarter adoption, they're refining it and improving it that way. So, I guess that's another question I want to ask you. Since you've been following the Oculus Rift, has it gone through revisions since the Kickstarter? Have they actually been like releasing different versions of it or improving upon it?
Not the Rift itself, not the hardware. They've shown tests and stuff, but right now it's a lot of people just doing development for it and finding out new issues, problems, solutions to things like, because there is a lot of problems with the Rift right now. One major issue is that the one that was released was 720p.
Okay.
So you have an issue with low resolution. So, and there's something, because of that, there's an issue called the screen door effect, where you can start seeing the pixelation if you look up close enough.
Okay. And one more question. You said that you have the developer's kit for it, right, for the Oculus Rift?
Correct.
So when it's actually released, are you going to get an actual retail version? Or is the developer's kit the only Rift you're going to get free with Kickstarter? Or what's included in your pledge with Kickstarter?
No, I'll have to buy the consumer myself.
Okay.
So again, what their plan and what they're doing is getting the ball rolling, right?
Mm-hmm.
So and that's really neat. Being able to have the community develop stuff for you, building a huge base, and also even before the product even comes out, proving how effective it actually is, and having heralds like nothing. I'm a herald, but people that are super excited about it, like me, preaching about it and trying to convince others to try it out themselves. I think it's always cool to have people experience or being dropped into a place and getting lost in it, which is amazing.
Yeah. I wish we could get a hold of some of these people and have them on, because it would be very fascinating to have a cast with like the guys from React Grid, from STEM, from Oculus Rift, and just see what they all think about how these technologies may change the future of the industry.
Well, the people at Tactical Haptics, they actually are really responsive on the forums. Not forums, I mean, their subreddit for Oculus. And I always tell them I never want to buy it because it's wired. And they always respond to me saying, no, 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 we'll have a wireless one in the future. I'm like, oh, okay. Does it help me now, though? I want it now.
Yeah.
But thing is that both the STEM and the other device isn't coming. I think the other device is coming in like November or maybe late summer. And the STEM is coming in June. So they're pretty far off, but it's going to be really cool. So and also, I believe that the Omni treadmill, just like a Kickstarter project, got delayed for 3 to 4 months for shipping and stuff. So they're also going to be being released. They said they wanted to do December, but now it's coming to probably late spring, early summer for them too, which is cool. Got all coming out at the same time. So I'm really debating getting that treadmill.
And when is the Rift schedule to come out?
None. There's nothing. 2014 is what they're saying. They're saying they want to release it in a matter of months, not a matter of years. So it's not going to come vapor hardware or anything else like that. It's coming out, but they want to make sure it's perfect. And there's a lot of rumors that are coming out, but it was really cool because they're so responsive to the community. A lot of it got squished.
All right, so we could probably have a lot more conversation on that, but I think that's a good point to move on. What I want to talk about next is a game that I've been playing, which I posted a review about yesterday, which is Batman Arkham Origins.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the third game in the series, and it's not done by the original developer, Rocksteady. They're working on supposedly a next-gen version or a next-gen Batman game, or they maybe work on a next-gen original property. So this got sent to WB Montreal and Splash Damage, who did a multiplayer. And this is definitely a very disheartening game to play, because WB Montreal basically copied Rocksteady's formula down to a T with how the gameplay is, the story, even just like simple stuff about how combat plays out. Yet they messed up with like each one of those aspects. Combat didn't feel as refined. The city had a lot of inaccessible areas, invisible walls, and it's actually quite buggy. I ran into a few bugs where I couldn't complete quests because the trigger wasn't responding.
Mm-hmm. And I've had the same kind of experience, too.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird that this is the third game in the series, and I think this is one of those examples of how much the soul or the personality of a studio can have an impact on the game development. WB Montreal was basically given a blueprint for success. I mean, the last two Batman games were, you know, best of games for their respective years.
Right, and I wonder what Rocksteady is actually doing. I think they actually have licensed the name, or they copyrighted the name Batman Universe. So hopefully it's not some sort of MMO. Please tell me that I make an MMO. However, I mean, I think that people are very disappointed in this game. I mean, it's more of the same, which is fine. But it feels too much of the same. And it feels rushed. And it feels kind of like what Assassin's Creed did. Like the same reaction with Black Flag, right? People are like, what, another game? Just wait a few years and make another one. Don't rush it. And I feel the same thing happened with this Batman one. And it's done by an another studio.
Yeah.
Which feels, and you definitely feel it. Even though it looks the same, it doesn't feel the same. Mm-hmm. And I feel the city is actually looks worse than it did in Arkham City. At least it's not as memorable, right?
Yeah.
The villains aren't as memorable either. And
I
feel like
people like saying how much they like the boss fights in Arkham Origins, but I found them to be pretty pedestrian. I still think Arkham City had the best combination of boss fights, although the Scarecrow sections from the first game were, you know, really great moments.
Well, I still like the Ra's al Ghul ones, too.
Mm-hmm.
I actually like the story, too, for City. I think that was a pretty good self-word, but I guess I haven't got to the point yet, but the Joker, no spoilers, but the Joker is in Origins, and you see the origins of how they first met and create the rivalry.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's not even needed, but I guess it's there, and I'm going to have to play it. But I did, at least I got the game on a discount, because I found a seller for like $20. I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. And it was really funny, because I get a lot of reviews. I forget what the site's called. It's called like CD Warehouse or CD Key Warehouse or something like that. And again, this is just kind of off topic, but I bought the game, and what I got in email was a picture of someone's key. And I'm like, that is shady as hell.
Yeah.
But I did get it for $20, and it does work, and my identity hasn't been stolen yet, so that's cool.
Win-win right there.
Yeah. So, because I really did love City, and I really did love Asylum, so I wanted to try Origins out. But I've been playing, and I realized I'm not actually compelled to continue playing it.
Yeah.
It just feels so like I've done it before.
Yeah, and it's the first one that I've lost the desire to replay in like New Game Plus, and they have like a super difficult mode for it too.
You've beaten it already?
No, I stopped playing after the new game. After the regular game, I just got bored of it. And the whole like challenge system, I mean, their whole Enigma collectibles,
sure,
are just so basic compared to what they did with the Riddler stuff in the first two games. Those games, they made you really work to get those collectibles. I mean, there were a few gimmies, but most of the time they had you do all kinds of crazy stuff, which was kind of funny how in Arkham City, how the whole city was just a like giant puzzle for the Riddler.
Yeah, and I really, again, the challenges seem just arbitrary, right, for this one. It doesn't feel like he's actually playing with you. He doesn't know you. Why would he even mess with you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do they even exist? It feels like it's really contrived. Because you're right, because they are copying it to a T, not everything's going to fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a good point, how there's a lot of moments in Arkham Origins I feel like they were just like taken wholesale out of the first two games. So they have a hallucination section, which I'm not going to spoil when it happens, but you have a good idea once you meet the guy. But it feels very plain compared to the Scarecrow sections from the first game, or the Mad Hatter fight in the second game.
Right.
And
I feel like the open world thing, even the open world, quote, open world,
mm-hmm.
kind of lessens it, because I really did like the tight quarters of Asylum more. Well, traversing that kind of felt more of a stealth-based game. This one feels more of a beat 'em up than a stealth-based game. I mean, stealth-based stuff is there, but it's not as frequent, you know? The fights feel really contrived. I really dislike that.
Yeah, and I noticed that I was getting hit a lot more, like he wasn't responding as well that they did in previous games.
The ground takedowns are a lot harder to pull off. And even if you take it down, you'll probably get hit again. So before you can even pull it off, it was stuck. So again, they made that way harder for no reason.
Yep, and the whole story, which I only want to spoil here, but the story just like it opened up a lot of plot points that just like kind of disappeared. Like they introduced the eight assassins, but a lot of them really didn't do much to the whole story.
Well, I think to me, the best thing that came out of Origins, at least from my experience so far, and it's only been a few hours, is the teaser trailer that they had with Bruce Wayne go through the years. Did you see that video?
No, I haven't.
Look it up. It's a picture of him when he's a boy, and then it shows him going through the funeral and him as a teenager, and then it just shows all the different stages of grief, and then him his acceptance as Batman. I think that was the best thing of it. And that's actually what sold me on the game. It's like, all right. I love City. I love Asylum. I love this trailer. So I'll give it a shot and see if it ever goes on sale. Then I got it, and it just feels so I've been there, done that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think if they would have done a proper, like, year one Batman, I think that would have
Yes.
been really amazing.
A year one Batman would have been interesting.
Yeah, because this just, like, as you said, it just feels like a retread of Arkham City, but without any of the charm and design of the previous games. And I'll
They
give you.
go
Oh,
ahead.
go ahead. Oh.
I was about to say that I feel like they're really scrapping down the barrel, bottom of the barrel for who they can bring in as villains, you know?
And so what I was going to say is that an example to me of the difference between like the care and dedication that Rocksteady pulled and what WB Montreal did was if you look at the previous two games, Arkham City and Arkham Asylum, when you go into the details for the characters, they have, you know, like complete bios, and the first thing they actually had when these characters first appeared, they had all these like little Easter egg and like Riddler clues that gave you like little, you know, teasers about these characters. And then when you get to Arkham Origins, none of that is there. There's, you know, these hidden extortion files, so if you collect enough of the collectibles, but they're like nowhere near like the same level of writing as we saw Rocksteady did in the previous games.
Sounds like Dragon Age 2 syndrome, where they had like probably a very short window, and they pretty much just redid Arkham City, right? And they just, I mean, I really know what they really should have done. They really should push the Christmas Eve thing more and more. But I feel like it wasn't Christmas Eve-y enough in the city.
Yeah, and actually reminds me, they had this. There's this plot point with the character Calendar Man that he shows up like in like the first 10 minutes of the game, and then he's like never seen again.
Yes. He should be
And
murdering all over the place. It's Christmas
yeah,
Eve.
shouldn't that be like his big time to be like going out and doing all kinds of crazy stuff?
Yes. Well, then again,
Yeah.
I don't really know the Calendar Man's history as much. But another thing too is like when you have Asylum and you have City, you really get the idea of all these established villains in the Asylum. And I feel like here it's a lot of the villains are just forgettable, right? Because it's funny. And I was watching a video about, the promotion of the game is saying that these villains or these assassins define Batman. This is what defines you. They don't define him. The cast of the original City and an Asylum could define the character, There's Joker, there's Scarecrow, they're all different parts of his psyche. You can definitely tell. It's way more clear in that aspect. But these are just assassins. Their only motivation is to kill Batman for money. Or maybe throw the kill. That's about it. All these other characters are really different and have a different perspective on what the wrongdoing is, right? So why they're doing it.
Pretty much the only real high point for Arkham Origins for me is the voice actor of the Joker, Troy Baker. He pulls off like just an almost perfect impersonation of Mark Hamill's Joker. I mean, you can hear when he does like more like the maniacal lines that he sounds really close to Hamill, but he still does it enough to sort of differentiate himself from him.
Well, yeah, and I think that when I first heard his rendition of the Joker in Comic-Con, I thought it was very impressive. I think everyone was impressed by how close it was to what they expected. However, the other Batman doesn't feel, it feels like it's dwarfed, his performance compared to the other one. And also, did you notice how weird the facial animation was on Origins?
Yeah.
Feels really unnaturally stiff, especially Alfred.
Or like some of the assassins, the woman, when she's talking, she's one of the few people who doesn't wear a mask. Like her face looks very, like you said, it looks very stilted.
Yeah, I just think of the limited technology. And again, it's this is like the B or C team working on this game. And I feel like, because there's a lot of these bugs that should have been taken care of during QA. So it definitely feels like this game was rushed, way rushed. And it didn't give them the time. I think Rocksteady should have just kept the reins.
Yeah.
And I think they... Go ahead.
I think, as I think they were saying, the WB was really pushing for a Batman game. They really wanted to turn it into an annual series. But that just doesn't work, especially if you're trying to do quality games. You can't really put out quality games one every year. It doesn't work.
Can't.
It's just not possible.
Can't do that. Maybe a Lego Batman, but that's not this Batman. So what they're doing is, all they're doing right now is hurting their brand. The game is adequate, sure. But you don't want to contrive the series. You don't want the series to feel not only wasted, but to tire the audience either. Because right now, I had to push myself to play it. And that's a bad sign right there.
Mm-hmm. And I already uninstalled it after putting up my review of it yesterday, because I just don't feel like wanting to play anymore. And I think the best part is that it made me want to play the other two games again. So that's why I rebought them from the Humble Bundle this week. Just to replay those who get on the PC, because I enjoy them so much.
Yeah, and you can say, you know, City, whatever City did, there's the faults with City compared to Asylum, but still, I think they made some great improvements, and they really did. I think the story was even more, a little more fleshed out than the first one too. So,
yeah.
And the boss fights were definitely not completely fixed, but much better than Asylum,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And that, again, that everyone remembers that freeze fight. They love that freeze fight. That was a really cool fight.
Yeah, that's one of my examples of, like, really great uses of stealth for a boss fight.
Right, in the game, again, stealth. It seems like stealth was focused in the game still. With this current game, with Origins, I feel like it's just beat 'em up. I beat 'em up. I just run into a crowd. And why are all these people on rooftops? Why? It doesn't make any sense. It's hard to get on a rooftop in real life. Why are they just hanging on rooftops all the time? But what happens? It's just a gang of people on rooftops. What are they doing there? There's, like, seven of them. They're not even doing... They're just standing there. Not even protecting anything.
And
it's just... Go ahead.
As you said with the Enigma stuff, why are there obtuse puzzles all around the city? This is his first introduction to this world. Why would he feel the need to set up crazy, insane switches and puzzles all over the place if he has no one to play it off with?
Yeah, exactly. And in City, he was already crazy. It's already well established what he did. I mean, it is a far of a stretch for Catwoman, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, other than that, I mean, it made sense to me why he would do it. Because he's crazy, and he wants to play around with Batman. He's not 100% evil. He just wants to, he's just bored with all the dumb people around him. And it feels like the Dark Knight is the only one that can best him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and the whole, like, and they, of course, had Bane in it again, because they need to have some sort of a pool or a continuity between the last two games. But those ones are actually, like, the most annoying, because they felt like the same things we did in the previous games. But they just threw more guys in to fight you.
Well, yeah, and the Croc fight and the Bane fight, I heard, are the same. So that's lame. But again, I'm going, because I did spend money on it, I will go ahead and give it a try and try not to waste my $20. But I feel like it's going to be just a mediocre game, which is a tragedy, too.
Yep. But I guess it's kind of funny that even a mediocre Batman game is still an okay game, like in the grand scheme of things.
Definitely.
As you said, it still is going to take a hit to the brand.
I would have really liked it if I never played the other two, right? It would have felt fresh.
Mm-hmm. But then again, if this was the first game, they wouldn't have had a formula to copy from.
True. And again, like Rocksteady really hit gold with their stealth game. They were a really great balance of stealth and action.
Yep.
Here, it's way too heavy on the action, not enough on the stealth. And a lot of the abilities to level up feel just, again, they feel arbitrary too. I feel like, what's the point? Like, you already get all the skills from the get-go. You don't gain them over time. So you don't learn how to use them. They just assume you know how to use them already.
Yep, the tutorials in this game are just horrible. There's no mention of how you're supposed to take out larger enemies with, like, his triple stun attack.
Yes.
And a lot of the gadgets, they're sort of just, like, thrown in, and they're never really given, like, a proper tutorial.
Yeah, I feel like this game just kind of got a pass because it was Batman. But, again... It's not like the formula was broken. It's just that it's been done too much. It's pushing people's, you know, how much they're willing to put up with.
Mm-hmm. And as we said, the formula is really good, because, I mean, Rocksteady has refined over their last two games. But there really is a difference you can see in quality of studios. Even with an established formula, WB Montreal still messed up on very detailed elements of the design.
Well, the concept itself was actually not too bad, at least in terms of story. Mm-hmm. The story was okay. But I really like the idea of putting it on Christmas Eve. I think that's pretty cool. I think they had a lot to play there, but I feel like right now it's not really panning through. So, but again, I can't give a full assessment or review of the game until I actually finish it. But just now that playing an hour or so in, I just don't want to do any of it.
Yeah, there's just like no real like payoff to the game compared to the other ones. And as you were talking about like bugs that should have been caught in QA, there's a bug where one of the fast travel areas was completely unsolvable due to a bug. And I mean, this isn't like a hidden bug where you have to do a crazy stuff. I mean, this is literally, you try to enter the vent and Batman doesn't climb into it.
Yes,
How the hell did that get passed through QA? I mean, yeah. I can understand if it was some like crazy thing, like you equip a combination of gadgets, but I mean, it's literally, you try to use a basic control and it doesn't work.
Yeah, my computer actually crashed once with the game too, so there's that.
Yeah, I had several crashes too during the game. And then, of course, you had to go through all those startup movies again, which someone finally gave me the right thing to type in on the Steam panel, the Steam launch option to get rid of that.
Yeah, well, you know what? I feel like, just like you said, I feel like I'm selling City and just playing that. Because I played it on the console, but I didn't play it on the PC. And it's going to look a lot better.
Yeah.
So maybe I should just play that and just say, like, I spent $20 on the other game. But... Yeah,
of course, for those of you listening who haven't played Batman games yet, definitely look at this week's Humble Bundle, the WB Bundle 4.
It's a great deal.
Yeah, especially if you haven't played them, you'll be in for a treat that way.
Yeah, you'll skip War of the North, and which I actually, it's one of those mediocre games I would never pay for. It wasn't mediocre, it was just kind of phoned in, but I still want to give it a trot, because I haven't played a fantasy game in a while, actually.
Yeah.
So there's that, and they also got Scribblenauts, which I've never played, so I want to see how that is.
It was okay, very interesting idea, but that's not one of those games I just got tired of playing after a while. But I'll be interested to see what you think of it once you start getting into it.
I'm just going to type Cthulhu, and then that's first what I'm going to do with the whole game.
Cthulhu's the answer to everything.
Exactly, that'll end the fight quick. But yeah, so it's a pretty cool game, a really cool bundle. And there's also that, if you guys like adventure games, that other bundle's really good too. But I actually haven't played Finish New Beginning, because a lot of those Adalic games, especially Deponia, is really, really, really set into that arbitrary adventure game rules. So, so bad.
So it's like the opposite of what Telltale's do.
Correct. It is some stretch your mind kind of puzzles. Not even clever puzzles, just annoying puzzles. And I love Deponia's art style. It's just, again, I don't want to have to. Again, that's the reason adventure games even died in the first place, or was seen as a dead genre, was because of the puzzles just got out of control. So. Same thing goes with here, because again, I think, you know, Walking Dead, Telltale are doing a service by simplifying it and seeing, what would you do in the situation? How would you solve this puzzle? I think them being realistic about it is far better than arbitrary hook, statue, lawn item, four key is better than, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's just that kind of arbitrary, combine this craft so I can access one area is really stupid.
So, have you been, besides Batman, have you been playing any other interesting games this weekend?
I've been trying some MOBAs of recent. I'm playing League, and I've been looking at other games similar to it, and played a little Dota to see what the MOBAs are all about. Because I just watched it was a video called Real Sports, and they actually did a little doc on focusing on competitive games, or video games as a competitive sport, is what I'm trying to say. And they focus specifically on League of Legends because of the gigantic championships and the mass viewership, which is actually more than football. And the pot, it's $1 million, so it's a pretty big deal. And a lot of people, they actually focus on some star players and what they had to go through, and some people that are trying to get into the ranked matches and compete at this national level, or international level, actually. So that's pretty cool. So I decided to give it a shot because all my friends play it. So I decided to see what it's all about. And it's if you play a PvP game, it is very toxic. It's still toxic, but there is an honor system which allows you to say if your teammate was, friendly, helpful, or teamwork. And obviously those numbers will help calculate in terms of who you get matched up with when you play a PvP game. I don't think it matters in ranked, but just like a PvP game, it'll affect you a little bit. Same thing goes, but you also can play bot games, so you don't have to play against, you can play with, like, cooperatively with other players against bots, which is a good, a good introduction to playing against people.
Yes, I know League of Legends. I think they originally didn't have the bot, and that was sort of added in over time.
Yeah, and they actually redid the AI, so they're way more realistic now too. And it's a game where I really am compelled to spend, like, free to play. I think they have a really good model set up. The cost is pretty high for a lot of the stuff, though. Like, again, a skin can cost up to $10 or $5, right? It's a lot.
Yeah, but they also have the. They also have weekly and sometimes daily sales on a lot of their stuff. So if you wait around, usually a character you like will have their skin on sale.
For like $5 or $4 or even $3, so definitely worth it. The one thing cool I can think about Riot, with this game too, is I can actually give people Riot points, and they would really appreciate it. So yeah, so I mean, I think the game definitely has a lot of I could see the addictive properties of the game. I just feel like I don't think I'll ever be able to play it at a ranked level. I could try it, but it's never gonna take off. But it's a cool game to try, and I can see why everyone's going the MOBA route, because I believe Infinite Crisis, the DC, is actually doing their own MOBA with their characters.
Is that actually out yet? Because I thought I heard it was being released soon.
Closed beta, invite only. But it seems, watching some of the highlight videos, it looks exactly like League of Legends and Dota. But
Yeah, I mean, they're League of Legends. Now, Dota, from what I understand, Dota is the original. It was a
correct,
mod for Warcraft.
Dota was the original. So people are like, well, you're just copying League. Yep, nope, Dota came first. So it was a Warcraft mod, actually.
Yep, and I do not even want to start that conversation. What's the better MOBA?
I don't want to discuss it either, because I don't really know. It's a different kind of thing. I think it's already kind of hard to master, but it being a sport, I can see why it's a sport. Like, watching commentary and playing the characters and getting a sense of what you have to do. I think for a person that has no idea what a MOBA is, to go into the game blind is brutal, because you want to run around and kill minions, but you have certain things like lanes and stuff to cover, and you have to have like a map awareness and awareness of the other players and awareness of your
You have to know your
teammates.
build, you have to know what items you're going to get.
Correct. You have to know how support works. Support isn't just healing and stuff like that. They need to actually put wards and stuff around the map so people can see, and like make sure they don't kill the minions so that the other person get money. There's a lot of different things that you can't do in a normal game. It's a game that's really structured, and you have to learn it before you play with other people.
And that's one of the reasons why I just got tired of the game because I really don't have the time to dedicate that much to one game. It would just be too much work, and I just got tired of playing the game. I got tired of my friends yelling at me for not playing properly, and life got a lot less stressful after I gave up League of Legends.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely other games that are not as toxic. I mean, and plus, with League of Legends, there is a certain acceptance of the toxicity. People actually joke about it too. But, you get a sense of only bad players are the one that rages. Like, you can see their score and they're just at the bottom, and they just scream about how, because they're the ones that are feeding the other players, they're the ones that are dragging the team down, yet they're complaining about how everyone else is letting them die. So but still, I'm still surprised about at the level of toxicity that does exist in the game, right? More than it's funny, because it's almost as much or even more sometimes than FPS games, which is crazy, because all they talk about is sleeping with my mother. So it's interesting to hear them say it in League, even though people have there's a what it's called, something that blocks swear words and stuff. Filter, a filter, a filter. People still just go around it by just spelling the words. You get the idea,
You still know what they're saying.
They still hate you.
Yeah. No way to filter that.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I've been trying that game. Been trying Batman, and I'm gonna try War of the North pretty soon. And I am gonna do some more virtual reality development. And I mean, there's actually a game that I'm making on the side with some people. And it's gonna support Oculus Rift stuff too. So I'll be double timing on all my development.
It's going to be crazy someday. Do you think that stuff like the Rift, the Razer, the Sim, you think someday that will become like the standard package for games?
If the price comes down, yeah, for sure. But right now it's too high.
Yeah.
So right now it's enthusiasts, but you have to understand, like, you're talking about maybe a couple hundred, like $600 total for all this stuff. Not counting the treadmill, it's a little too expensive still. But like $600, $400 right now with all the fancy bells and whistles without the treadmill. And before that would be $100,000 like 10
Yeah.
years ago or 15 years ago. So we've come a long way. So I think that as it comes down in price and people will get more exposure to it, I think people will become believers, and I think that'll pick up and we'll have a new type of game. You know, instead of just independent indies making side scrollers and AAAs making shooters, we'll have games that explore different types of mediums that have to, that deal with immersion and getting lost in a game.
I think what we truly need is a horror game that makes use of the Steam, the Omni, and the Oculus Rift.
That already exists. Outlast does that. Outlast has already has support for it.
Really?
But yeah, I think everyone is making horror games
Yeah.
for the Rift, and it's super easy to scare someone on the Rift. I'm serious. It's put that on. I'll put you on Slender: The Arrival, which has support for Oculus Rift, and you will be scared. You'll be severely scared. It is ridiculous. And sound is so important with the Rift now. You can just hear it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even using this headset now, it's amazing how much of a difference it is compared to just having the stereo hooked up.
Yeah, you have the Alpha, right? Sound Blaster,
Yeah.
whatever it's called. Yeah, pretty good. Good for noise cancellation. However, I really love my wireless version of them. So,
So, I know we said we're going to have a quiet chat, and we've actually gone for over an hour. So, I guess the last point that I want to talk about then, and this is sort of what we've been talking a little bit about with Batman Arkham Origins, is sort of this decline that we're seeing in terms of sequels in the AAA industry. It seems that over the last few years, game quality, especially with sequels, has been declining. We saw it with Resident Evil 6, sort of seeing that with what happened with Assassin's Creed, Batman, and of course the recent Call of Duty game has been getting slammed with negative reviews. Which is surprising to me with Call of Duty. I mean, I've usually seen, nines and tens for the Call of Duty games.
well, I think people are just tired of the formula, and the game itself is poorly optimized. I mean, it uses 6 gigs of memory. It has higher requirements than Battlefield, but looks a lot worse. It feels worse than Black Ops 2 for a lot of people. But people still buy it because it is the sports games like level. It's the Madden for shooters will buy it. But they did admit that it sold less than Black Ops.
And as we talked about, the whole idea of annual series, I think, is a very toxic element towards game quality. Because you can't
Yes.
do a quality game in 1 year, especially a AAA game that's, millions of dollars of development. To get all that done in a 12-month period is just insane.
Yeah, and again, people just think about the single player as throwaway, and this game costs $100 million, right? $100 million, and it's still like super unoptimized, super unplay tested. I mean, it really feels like a rehash, and I think everyone feels that same way. It's like, why do I want to spend $60 on this? What do I get from this? Wow, is it great? It has a dog in it? Okay, that's like everyone jokes about dogs and fish. But those scenes, those sections are far, few and far between. I feel like Black Ops took a lot more risk than this one did. This is on the nose, same formula, really bad,
Yep.
really
As we
hollow gameplay.
said with the same thing with back on Arkham Origins, they copied that formula to a T, but they still messed up on it. It wasn't exactly the same quality.
Well, a lot of Infinity Ward resigned. Like the original team of Infinity Ward has moved to the developer that made Titanfall, which I forget the exact name for it right now. But yeah, so they're on Titanfall. So those great developers are there. So we'll see what happens with this game. But I think Battlefield really beat it hands down. You know, because Battlefield there's a lot more. It's vehicle combat. It's huge maps, destructive environments. And it looks great. It looks really good. Now, the single player kind of suck? Probably. Does it suck worse than Call of Duty? No. But I'm just saying that I think people are just getting tired of it. Now, the average person? No. That's why it's still selling like $1 billion, right? It's still selling super well. But in terms of the hardcore gamer population and at least the more red population is definitely not buying it or giving it a shot. But again, they're just, COD is such a large brand that this diminishing return probably won't happen until next game. Or actually, maybe the diminishing return started this game, actually. That's probably what happened. Sorry. So it's finally starting to diminish. Its ratings are going down, and they're going to have to do something drastic to get the series to go back up to its numbers.
Yep, and this is a problem that we saw. I think EA said this in one of their many quotes that they're only interested in games that can be turned into franchises. And I think
Yeah.
that's a huge mistake to look at the industry.
Yeah, and that's a major problem. And that's a major problem with the film industry too. It's too risky to start a new IP. You need a game that's established, because if it's established, then you don't need to do as much marketing. All you need to do is a small amount of investment for the marketing, for awareness. And if the brand is already known, and if the brand was even pseudo successful, why not continue it instead of spending three times the cost with a new IP, right? I mean, the only game that I actually do want a sequel to is Mirror's Edge. So we'll see how that goes with EA.
And as I talked to John Schaefer about a few weeks ago, the AAA industry is sort of in a rock and a hard place. They spend so much money on games that they can't make these, niche, very small successes. If you're making a game that costs, like $2 million, $3 million, you can't have a game that only sells marginally well. It's going to still be a huge failure. So they have to, they have to basically bet on the established hits. And as you said, it's a lot easier to convince someone to buy a brand or a game that's had two or three products in it compared to something that's never before been seen.
Too much of a gamble to throw millions of dollars into. And I think that's a problem that Square is going through, is they're putting 7 years development to a game with astronomical costs, and then when it fails, they call all the other games also failures because they can't bring the company back into the green. So
And I think this is sort of why Kickstarter and indies are doing so well these days, because they can pitch these crazy, out there, very unique ideas, but they're making them exactly for the audience. They're not making a game that's going to sell to, the same audience as Call of Duty or Battlefield. They're selling to a niche audience that's going to love their game, and that's going to be enough to keep them in the black.
yeah, and it's also going to avoid focus groups, thank God. I think focus groups have really destroyed games, watered a lot of games down. Focus groups also watered down a lot of movies, while focus groups also made all the toys in the 90s. I think focus groups have their place, but I mean the reason they exist in the first place is because they're trying to do, and again, and no one likes to hear this, but they want to expand their audience to a casual level.
I mean, expand the audience on one hand is great, but if you do it at the cost of your established fans, you're basically, taking two steps forward, three steps back.
And don't forget, in watering down the design or the impact of a message, all that kind of stuff, for the purpose of, well, I want kids to play it too, or I want the adults. It's like whatever, you're shooting for a base that doesn't even care. So.
It's better to make the original vision as best as you can and then try to make it more appealing rather than trying to change it 10 or 15 times during development, because you're just wasting time and money on stuff that you're basically just going to throw out.
Exactly. And I feel like a lot of this games and stuff is really stuck up to marketing. Talking about $50 million, $100 million. I'll say $100 million, or $50 million in marketing. That's crazy. That's probably more the development of it. So, I mean, I feel, and also it's funny because talking about Call of Duty, there was a cutscene where you're like, on the ground and someone's picking you up. But it happened in Modern Warfare also, and had the exact duplicate, same motion capture, exactly the same, just different environment. And the old one actually looked better than the new one. So
Good.
there's that. So, and there's a lot of recycled everything. So like, where'd all the money go to?
They probably went to getting Megan Fox in the TV commercial.
Really, I guess that is, I don't know. It's, I just feel like this, when this whole Modern Warfare shooter fad goes away, thank goodness is what I'm saying to that. I don't know if it'll ever go. I think it's gonna be the FIFA and Madden. It's gonna stay here forever. People will buy it every year for some stupid reason.
I mean, there are, like, speaking about, like, EA with the Madden, there are the annual fans. There's the guys who will just play Madden, and that's it. They won't buy any other games. They'll just buy their yearly version of Madden and just deal with that. And that has really been, the staple of EA Sports, I think, for a long time, are those core dedicated football fans.
Yeah, and I just think it's funny that Madden 94 won Game of the Year. How did that game win in the year? That's crazy. But yeah, I just, again, I mean, we've discussed this in length before, but it's just that there's stagnation because of fear. Fear of taking a risk on interesting ideas, or they have taken a risk on ideas and they've lost money in the long run. So they'd obviously want to minimize that at all costs, because especially, I think, the underlying issue with a lot of these big companies like Activision and EA is that they're all publicly traded companies. They have to answer to their investors every quarter. So they need to make sure that things come out at certain times and deadlines are really strict. However, again, it's cool that development teams have such a large amount of money to use, but at the cost of possible quality, because they have to hit these deadlines. They rarely can they push them back, because the company can't. They need to have a certain amount of money back for their investors, show that their stock is improving.
Yeah, and don't forget about the overhead of running these giant companies. They can't make a small game that maybe only sells a few thousand copies. That's, even if it sells well, it's not going to pay for the cost of all these different studios and the hundreds of thousands of employees that work there.
Right, exactly. And don't forget that the CEO makes as much money as one game costs. So we're talking about, the CEO is making $1 million, like $10 million. While an average developer makes $50,000 or less, that's a pretty huge difference.
Yeah.
But that's something completely. That's American corporate culture. That's different. But that's still an issue, though, because Electronic Arts just renamed themselves Electronic Business of Games. Because the whole art thing, the whole message, the whole mantra of when they started, it's gone. It's been gone for 30 years, 20 years, yeah, 30 years for sure.
Definitely. And as you said, with like these major companies, this is one of the things I think when Chris Hecker said on our cast that he feels that this is really the golden age of indies. I think he's completely on with that, because the independent market has just grown so well that we're seeing so many developers who worked at AAA or major studios go the indie route, because they can find more success and more creativity here than they could at these major studios.
And plus, when you use Kickstarter or crowdfunding or sales through alpha or beta, people believe in your product because they believe in you. They believe in your ideas. They like what you did for that project. They thought like, oh, maybe all these things were weak, but I really like your contribution to the project, So there's definitely room for a lot of established developers to actually go that route and to actually make the game of their dreams. People will support them, and they'll have a fan base, and they won't need to answer to publishers.
Yep, and as we said, with just because of their name alone is enough to sell. I mean, when Double Fine had their two Kickstarters, that name alone was enough to get them funding.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting how what we're seeing with the independent market is that the companies themselves are the brands as opposed to their games. But with AAA, it's more about the games becoming the brand. So Call of Duty having, we have the tie-ins with Doritos and Mountain Dew. We've got all these different series having to build the games up as brands. But when you look at a AAA game, you really don't know the company behind it. You may just get the name of the actual studio, but you don't know the actual developers.
Right.
But with indies, I mean, when we spoke with Jamie Freestrom about Energy Hog, I mean, that's his game right there. We're talking to the actual guy who's building it up. And we know him, and we know what he's doing. It's very interesting how much of a difference that is.
And developers are getting more and more status, especially when they've created a game. And they have more say, too. And they when you have all these certain creative people making the games of their dreams, we have a lot more a varied landscape of games, which is great for the consumer. Because if it was up to the current model, all we'd get was Call of Duty and Batman game every 3 years. and Madden and FIFA and all those sports games, and then a bunch of, Angry Bird clones, and that's it. That's all we have.
Yep, and it's interesting how indies, while they're competing for sales, it's not a direct competition, because everyone is making their own different game.
Mm-hmm.
But with EA and, Activision, they're basically competing hand-in-hand, Battlefield versus Call of Duty.
Right. The thing is that what indies are doing is not competing against each other. They're competing for your time.
Yeah.
It's not even about the money. It's about the time, because the cost is really low to entry in most of those games. It's mostly can I keep you interested and can I keep you playing? Or can I, Gone Home, people thought that was a terrible investment, $17 or $20 for 2-3 hours of a game. I was cool with that. I thought it was an interesting experience. I thought it was something that I'd never seen before or played before in that kind of way. So to me, that was definitely worth the investment for it. So I thought that was a fine cost for the hours that I wanted. It was great to see other people play the game myself, experience things differently for me. But that's the great thing about independent games is, again, the low cost and the interesting experiences. And I'm also more willing to spend money on independent games over large publishers because, again, one's a faceless entity and one's a person. One's a small team. So that's another great thing about indies too, because the more indie money you pay or more games you buy that are from independents, the more you're supporting the cause.
Yeah, and especially when they're making a game that really speaks to you. when you're looking at, you know, a AAA game, it's a game that's been through, you know, as we talk, like, hours of focused testing and try to make it the most mass marketed as possible. But with an independent game, if it speaks to you, you're going to buy full price, no questions asked. I mean, I've been looking at Clockwork Empires from Gaslamp.
Uh-huh.
They're the guys who did Dungeon of Dread, and they have me at their tagline. It's a Lovecraftian steampunk city builder. I can't think of a better tagline for a game to get me to buy it than that.
Yeah, mishmash of those kind of genres, or even interesting art styles, is enough to pull me in, too. Because you know they'll pull it off. Maybe not to the extent and the vastness of AAAs, but they'll definitely put their all into the experience and put the hours in as needed. And again, just not unlike big publishers and stuff like that, or big developers, I mean, if you have a problem, they'll talk to you directly, pretty much. You can actually send them a mail, which is really neat that you can be so close, or just a Twitter message, whatever, that'd be so close to these people. And I think that is another great quality of, and that's more of a technological thing, but I also think it's a really cool thing that developers are becoming public figures.
And speaking about what you just said regarding the art style, that's another interesting point. As we've talked about in previous casts, if your game can establish a good art style, that can work around a lot of times any kind of like technological or graphical enhancements that you see in AAA titles. Because we've said before, a lot of these AAA games look just very mass-produced. They all look like the same game, grays and browns. But when you have a game like Don't Starve or any of the other number of independent titles, I mean, you look at it in 1 second, you instantly know what that game is and what that brand is.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, again, it's the style, the art direction, is going to last a lot longer than a lot of what AAAs are doing for ultra-realistic.
Well, and I guess like the last point then, I mean, we've talked about this, I forget how many times at this point, the whole Overstrike and Fuse argument.
Mm.
I think we've said too many times to really talk detail about it now, but basically, long story short, they took a cartoony style and they turned into a gray and brown military style. And the game basically disappeared from public awareness after like 2 weeks.
Right, because again, the game was too bland. It had a really cool trailer, style, feel, look, everything. But then they were like, meh, that's like looking realistic, like super realistic.
It'll sell well. It'll get those people.
People love squad shooters that you can't play by yourself. Mm-hmm. Go for it. Well, they can't play by yourself, but they're stupid AI. But yeah, I think there's definitely things changing within the industry. And I think the independent scene and alternate technologies are really, and Kickstarter and crowdfunding they're doing a great service for, you know, gamers and consumers.
And I think that's a good point to end on. Because as I've said, I think the next 7 years, or well, going on 6 years in 2 months, is going to be a very interesting time for the game industry. How much the independent scene has changed, how Kickstarter and these technologies are growing. It will be very interesting just to see how crazy the industry is going to be by the end of the decade. I'm just wondering if we're going to see any major studios other than 2K or Take-Two, I always get those two confused, bow out at the end.
Yeah. And it's really kind of cool to see how that's going to shape up and how technology will shape the industry too. Because again, computers are becoming wearable. Phones are more powerful than computers. And they've already showed like a card as powerful as a Titan running on a device. So really cool.
So I think with that, we've had a lot of good discussions for this cast. And a lot of stuff I think we could come back to later on. Especially stuff like the Rift, Omni, and the STEM.
I'll bring some people on for a VR cast one day. And we'll have a talk about virtual reality.
Yeah, that'll definitely be cool. All right. With that, Ken, it was great talking to you for the last just about hour and a half.
Mm-hmm. And nice talking to you also.
And thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Perceptive Podcast. As always, if you're interested in either writing for Game Wisdom or being a future guest, feel free to send me an email. You can find all the information under Submissions Wanted on the front page. That'll give you the guidelines as well as my email. With that said, have a great weekend. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you again next week. Take care, everybody.
Good night.